The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from the WGBB studios in Merrick, New York, this is Sports Talk New York.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to WGBB Sports Talk New York. We are live here in Merrick, Long Island, New York. My name is Chris Caputo. I'm going to bring you for the next hour. My co-host, Mike Guidone, is away enjoying hopefully some nicer weather than what we're experiencing here in New York. But we do take time this weekend to remember why we get an extra day off on this Memorial Day. And thank everyone for all their sacrifices that they made and remember those that we have lost. But we do have sports to talk, and here in New York, it's kind of an up-and-down time depending on what sport and what team you're rooting for. The New York Mets have gone into a huge downfall, but the New York Knicks have won three straight in their Eastern Conference Final, and the Yankees have started to put some runs on the board as well. But the rain comes down here in New York, but we still continue on. We got a big night for you. We hope you can sit back, relax. If you want to call in, our number tonight is 516-623-1240. Again, that's 516-623-1240. Our shows are played back for you on Sports Talk NY, so you can find us there. Again, my name's Chris Caputo. Tonight we got at least one guest and possibly some extra for the second half hour. In our first half hour, we're going to speak to 1986 Met catcher Ed Hearn, and we'll talk to him about this summer. The Mets are getting back together for the 40th anniversary, and then later we'll take your call. So we're going to get right into it. So we're going to welcome in our first guest. He was a backup catcher for the New York Mets in 1986, and he also had some time with the Kansas City Royals. We're happy to join in Ed Hearn. Ed, thanks for joining me. It's Chris Caputo here in New York.
You betcha, Chris. Sorry about the bad weather this weekend.
You know, it's been tough. We've had a lot of rain here, and, you know, sometimes you have to make adjustments. But we do what we can, and hopefully when you come here on August 1st, we'll have nice, bright sunshine and a beautiful weekend for you.
Boy, I hope so. That's going to be a wonderful time. A couple days there, you know, with all the fellows, the 86 guys, and you know, they're even making new rings for us.
Really?
I was shocked at that. They're nice. They look like the World Series ring, only they have the NY on the top of the ring in diamonds instead of the one single diamond.
Okay.
So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, so you know, this whole reunion, the 40th, when's the last time that you were back with most of these guys for a reunion?
Well, I was at an autograph show, Lucky's,
right.
Autograph events. I was out there at,
Hofstra?
Hofstra.
Yep,
just a few weeks ago. We had a great turnout, and I saw a video somebody took, and there was a heck of a line there out for me. And the reason for that, you know, not because I'm a big superstar, I'm just Ed. You know, I'm not a big name guy. I only got two letters in my name. I'm not strong, Larry. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
there was a line going out to Gazoo when I went out for public signing, and that's mainly because you know, you have to. I have been back with the guys lately, and I really haven't because the last 3 or 4 years have been really tough health wise, and just, you know, I just haven't been back. I went down to Mets Nancy camps and coached down there up until the last 3 years. And so I've been kind of out of sight, out of mind a little bit. And so everybody was trying to get their, you know, 86 World Series team photo signed with all the guys. You know, that's a very hot item. I was one of the last one or two remaining because I hadn't been around.
People want that last one. Yeah, that's interesting, and people want to get that extra signature on an item that maybe has a lot of signatures. But, again, we're talking with Ed Hearn, a member of the 1986 World Series. Ed, you were drafted by the Phillies in the fourth round, 1978. You were from Florida, and, you know, what did you decide to do from there? You had an opportunity to play at West Point.
Yeah, I had opportunities at several colleges for football and baseball, and definitely the nomination appointment to West Point is a very big honor, and I had some Ivy League schools that I could have went to, but ultimately I decided that it was time to you know, pursue my dream, and I signed with the Phillies and had a great rookie season in Helena, Montana. I tell you, I fell in love with Montana. Then Ryan Sandberg and I were claiming feet on that team, and it was just a fabulous first year in the minor leagues, and it got a little rough after that with some injuries, but, you know, I was with the Phillies for about 5 years in the minor leagues, and with the injuries I had, they didn't think I'd ever catch again. They even said I might not walk normal again. So I said, look, I'm not going to make it to the big leagues as a, you know, big powering first base or DH. So do my release, and if anybody wants to give me a shot at catching again, then that's what I want. If not, you know, I got some marbles to go back and do something in the real world. So they gave me my release, and I signed with the Mets, and, you know, Vin Van Baum in 83, 84, 85, and 86 World Series. So, you know, not many people realize what people have told me, that there's very few of any of those people that have a championship ring, 4 consecutive years, 1 at each level of minor league and then the Major League Baseball with the same organization.
Yep.
Lynchburg, Jackson, Tidewater, and then New York in 86.
Yep, a bunch of those Mets came up through the system with you as well that made it to the team in 86. So you guys had a lot of strong players down in the minor league system.
Oh, it was a loaded group of guys, man. It was a lot of fun. That first year at Lynchburg with Gooden and Lenny Dykstra, we won 100-and-some games. It was just phenomenal. We dominated that league. And, you know, we won every league, Texas League and Double A, Triple A in Norfolk, Virginia, and then up to the big leagues. And then, you know, Chris, you know, here's the ironic thing. The Mets traded me away to Kansas City this year, and you know what? Them poor folks there in Long Island, they haven't gotten a World Series ring out of the Mets since I was traded.
That's right. That was the it's the turning point. We got to get you back on the team for a one-day contract. Maybe we could start making things good in New York again.
Yeah, if I can make it to first place, that would be good.
Ed, you made the team in 86. What was your welcome to the majors moment when you realized that, you know, this is totally different now?
Boy, I tell you what my welcome moment was. I think you have a copy of my book or a picture of it, and the front cover is me in the Mets uniform, and I got my finger up in the air, number one looking thing. But what that was my first Major League home run. It happened on Father's Day, and the guys, you know, in New York, fans demanded curtain calls that year out of us guys, the Mets.
Right.
And I was raised to be humble and stuff, you know, Southern boy. And I was not into that. But, you know, Gary Carter, he was up there fist pumping and all that stuff. But Carter and Hernandez literally pushed me up the steps. And I step up, and I just pointed up with a finger. And that turned out to be the cover shot for my book, Conquering Life's Curves. And, you know, that was quite the moment. Really just incredible. And then after the game, really became even more special when one of the grounds crew guys had retrieved the ball from fans and traded some stuff for it. And I was able to present that to my dad, who was there in the stands. Mom and dad were there. And I was able to give that ball to them that evening. And it was just, I mean, that was I think that was the best moment of all.
Yeah. You obviously you played on a championship team. Talk to us a little bit what it was like to be on that team, to have to be ready every day, but also to be around some major superstars.
Yeah, well, being a backup to Gary Carter, first of all, is a tough job because he's going to play as often as he wants to, and basically that was all the time. But he had to have a break, and you know, he had to stay ready. And you know, it turned out, I think myself and Larry Lyons.
Yep.
Which was to swap back and forth between Tidewater, so he gets to back match. But, you know, Barry went there on the spring training, and then after a month or so, they called me up, and, you know, it didn't change. I was hitting over 300 most of the year. And then, of course, you know, the best part, I guess, for me and the team, maybe, was when Gary hurt his thumb, you know, playing first base in the second game of doubleheader there against the Cardinals. All the newspapers were, oh, boy. Worst thing that could happen to Mets, Carter goes down, and all the reporters were right there in front of my locker. What are you going to do, Ed Byrne? I said, you know what? I was real honest with him. I said, you know what? There ain't nobody around that can fill the shoes of Gary Carter.
Correct.
But I'm going to be Ed Byrne, and that's all I can do.
And I remember. And you know what? Yep, I remember a lot of those games going out to the West Coast too.
We went to the West Coast at all. We went 11-3 in that 2 weeks. So actually, Gary was a little chapped about that because he felt like that those 2 weeks cost him the MVP that year.
Yeah, probably. And yourself and Barry Lyons and even a little bit of John Gibbons had to give some depth to the team that year. You played in 49 games. What was the season like for you? You know, I know as you go on to the postseason, there's a lot that you know, you always have to be ready. But there was a lot going on with that team. It wasn't a team that was just there to, you know, take in whatever was going on. They wanted to be in the spotlight. So what was it like being around that team?
Do you think so, Chris?
Yeah, there's only a couple of books written about them.
Just one or two, I think. Yeah, The Bad Guys One was probably the most prolific book written about the 86 Mets. And, we were called the Bad Guys for a reason. It was a very cocky group. You know, when we left spring training, Danny said to the team, "We're not going to just win, we're going to dominate." And that quote has carried on. That was, it became the legend of the 86 Mets. But, you know, we were good. We were cocky. The guys were ready to fight at the drop of a hat, and guys wanted a piece of us because we were cocky. We'd walk in there and just say, "Hey, let's go." And, so we were in several brawls that year.
Yep.
And, it was a interesting season for a rookie. You know, I think like their parents tell the kid, "All right, it's okay for you to be seen but not heard."
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's kind of the generalization for a rookie. Some guys, you know, go up and make a lot of noise, but, you know, I thought my job was to do my job, and, you know, I didn't get involved in a lot of the stuff that was going on, and good thing I didn't.
Yeah.
I tell you, Chris, later on, I don't know, it was a year or two later, whatever it was, my mom, I sent her a copy of Perlman's book,
The
Bad Guys One, and she called me up a few weeks later. She goes, "Oh, my God, Eddie, if I had known that, I would have come up and got your butt out of there."
Yeah, interesting. I mean, some people see the stories of, you know, you guys flying back from Houston and trashing the plane and Davey Johnson taking the receipt and just ripping it up. Is that a true story? Now that he's gone, is that a true story that he basically said, "Forget this, we're not paying for it"?
I can see him right now coming out of his office and standing there in front of us and having that receipt, and he absolutely tore that thing up and said, "You know, we ain't doing this. We're going to go out and kick some butt. Forget about this, guys. It wasn't our fault anyway. The Wives did it."
Fired everybody up to win a World Series, which was very dramatic. I'm going to go back to July 22nd. Ray Knight and Eric Davis decide to get into a little collision at third base. You take over as catcher, and Gary Carter moves to third base. Jesse Orosco and Roger McDowell start playing flip-flop in right, left, pitch, all that stuff. Did that just become the norm for this team, or was that night just pretty crazy?
Well, I don't think it was the norm, but it was, you know, I mean, guys just did their job. And I'll tell you what, Gary played a heck of a game at third once he had to go over there. Hernandez turned a double play.
Yep,
Hernandez,
the pitcher, Carter, tried to bunt.
On the bunt play. And back to Tuffle for a double play. And that play is never made. But you had two superb athletes and ball players playing. One was out of position. But nevertheless, it didn't bother him. Hernandez was down that batter's throat. And when that guy bunted, Hernandez was on that ball like, he was on like doo-doo. And he fired it to Gary. And I was actually shocked that Gary just caught it and was going for two. And I'm like, "Oh, my goodness." And he threw a strike to Tuffle, and that was it. Double play.
That's
so
crazy.
You know, that was a heck of a game. It was great to play in that game because it was, you know, it was a little out of character. I mean, you don't see that happening all the time, especially with two pitchers, you know, flip-flopping in the outfield.
We also want to get into some of the comical stuff. Who was the funniest teammate you think you had in the clubhouse that year? Or was
it
two?
It had to be Roger McDowell.
Yeah, the Hot Foot.
I'll plug Roger's book. I haven't read it yet. Call it Hot Foot. And Roger was just always into, you know, creating mischief. And I got involved with him and some stuff. And, you know, Howard Johnson was in there. It was just a good group of guys. But you talk about the crazy guy, the lead character was Roger Goodell.
Catchers see everything on the field. What was the funniest thing you've ever heard from a batter while squatting behind home plate?
I cannot tell you that on radio, Chris.
Okay. It sounds good, but I'm guessing there's definitely a lot of them, especially some of those mound visits. Sometimes you got to go out and calm somebody down. You got to have something up your sleeve, correct?
Oh, absolutely. That's, you know, as a catcher, you have to be a psychologist. You know, that's as important as the physical tools. And, you know, you go out there, talk, you know, say something to the pitcher and depends on what the guy's like. You know, his personality is as big as anything. And, you know, I tell people, I've spoken all the country the last 30 years, and they want me to talk about teamwork and communication. And, you know, when it comes to communication, I love to tell them about, you know, what is said when it goes around. And it's kind of funny. I make it funny, but it is funny. You know, some guys, you go out there, and you pat them on the butt, and you can't get them riled up because they're so fired up. They just need to calm down. You need to relax as you can. And then the next guy, he needs you kicked in the butt.
Right.
And that's the guy you're spitting the back in his face, and you're saying things in Spanish that aren't very nice, and you want him to see blood when you leave. You want him fired up and mad at you if you have to. And then there's that guy who's, oh, he's all wired up and everything, but you've got to get his mind off of what he's doing right then. So there was more than one time I'd pull up to this kind of fellow and third guy, and I'd say, hey, young man, listen here. Hey, buddy, you see that chick over there in room 3 right there in front of the dugout, that blonde? You see what she's got in the front there? And, you know, the guy's looking at me like, what the hell? And he looks over, he goes, oh, my God, yeah. Oh, she's hot. Oh, oh. And all of a sudden, the guy's, you know, broken pattern of thinking.
Distract him a little bit.
You got to do what you got to do, yep. And that's just part of it.
We're talking with Ed Hearn, former Met from 1986, about lots of the things that he had to deal with on the field. Also, he has a book called Conquering Life's Curves, Baseball Battles and Beyond. Ed, you want to plug it a little bit, how maybe people can get an autographed copy?
I really not into plugging or hawking it, but I'd be glad to sign some. I'll tell you what, I'll put that book up against any book that's been written about the Mets. The book is not a baseball book, though. It's about life,
yep.
Baseball, life. And mostly life lessons. You know, I wrote that when our only child was a year or two old. And with all the health stuff that hit me right after my shoulder injury, I didn't know if I was going to be alive when, you know, Cody was going to be a teenager. And so the biggest motivator for writing that book was to leave stuff for Cody.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff that I had learned. So it's a solid book for, you know, any teenager or young people. And you know what? In today's world, adults need this stuff, you know? It's a tough world out there.
Yes.
And there's a lot of good things here. I say that all. I'm very humble about it, but, you know, I tell you what. People have said so many things after reading that. You know, one lady said, I can't read that again. I started it, and I couldn't go to sleep. I was up till 4 o'clock. I had to finish it. And then one person, the guy, he said, I went to the hospital and I took two books. I put your book in the Bible. And I took it to the hospital, and your book saved my life. And I just want to thank you.
Well, you've had you've survived multiple life-threatening health crises. You also, unfortunately, after getting traded to the Royals, where maybe you thought you'd be a starting catcher, your career ended based on injuries, including, I believe, rotator cuff surgery, correct? Or rotator cuff problems.
Yeah, that was the only thing really there. It's just, you know, bad timing, very bad timing, because, you know, the Royals traded for me to be their starting catcher, and that's what every player plays a game for, to not to be a backup, but to be a starting player. And, you know, the Royals had a great pitching staff, probably even better than the 86 Mets pitching staff, because they were, that 85 pitching staff was
Saberhagen,
Young, Arms, Saberhagen, Guzov, Buddy Black, and Dan Quisenberry. They were loaded. And here I was doing the starting job there, and they traded away a pretty good darn player to get me in David Cone,
mm-hmm.
who went and did some good things. Unfortunately, my shoulder blew, and just just barely couldn't get back. You know, we had a strike in the last spring training, and that hurt me a lot. But, you know, that hasn't been the biggest part of my life. I mean, it was tough losing that career. But, you know, I was on dialysis a year later. I've had 4 kidney transplants now. I've lost my ear and part of my left side of my head to cancer. I had 3 cardiac arrests a year and a half ago. I just nuts. I sleep with a breathing machine every night, and it's crazy. But you know what? It's given me a platform that I just, this reputation grew when I first had the opportunity to start speaking, which I had no thoughts about it when I came to Kansas City. But all of a sudden, I spoke at a Rotary Club, and next thing you know, it was amazing. Just started going to corporate events, associations all over the country. And I used to do an 80 to 90 student engagements a year up until COVID a few years back. And I'll tell you, I think I sent you a message and said, the speaking I've done the last 35 years has been better than being a Major League Baseball player. And that is the truth.
Well, you've used up a couple of your 9 lives, and hopefully you have a bunch left. But, you know, you obviously, you had to go through some stuff. You battled cancer yourself. You're taking pills. You're trying to keep your life going. But then you had to become a caregiver for your own child. And, you know, you talk a little bit in the book about, like, that bottom of the ninth mentality, where you have to have eyes on a bigger prize, and you kind of have to get through those stresses, to use that terminology. Was that harder to deal with some of the stuff with your own son than it is for some of the battles that you went through?
You know, it is harder when it's your child. It's definitely hard. Fortunately, he is in remission. You know, he got in remission very quickly. The problem with my stuff is it's just been constant over the last 35 years. You know, I've been taking, you mentioned the pills. As you said, that I'm thinking, well, he doesn't even know that I take about 50 pills a day. And I have for almost 35 years. It's absolutely nuts. But, like you said, you know, how do you battle that stuff? And that's one of the greatest seeds and messages that I share with people is what you have to do. You know, you can say, oh, I got to gut it out. I got to be tough. You know what you got to do? You have to get perspective. That's what you have to do when you're battling stuff. You're facing life's curve. You got to get perspective. Just like when you're hitting. You know, the problem with hitting curveball is, you know, guys that can't hit curveball don't recognize. Mm. And they don't have the perspective. It's just like in life. If you can't get a good perspective when you're going through life's curves, you know, it's a tough battle. You can be as tough as you want, but it takes a good perspective. And everyone wants to know, how do you get a good perspective? You know, what's the right perspective? Well, if it's not tough, what is it? Well, I tell people, you do one thing. You think outside, and you know, when I say that to an audience, they go, Vox! Think outside the box. I'm like, oh my God, I think like I'm throwing up. It's not about a box. You stop thinking outside yourself. Mm. That's how you get perspective, to help you to battle almost anything in life. And, you know, fortunately I learned that, and it's allowed me to stay alive. That and the wonderful lady, woman, young gal that I left New York with, and just down the street from where you're at, she's from Lindenhurst, Long Island.
There you go.
And 38 years we've been married, and she's a nurse, and she has kept me alive. She's an absolute angel sent from God, I mean to tell you. And I would not be here if it weren't for her. No chance.
That's good you say that. You know, we are happy to have you back here in August. Is there somebody through the Mets organization, either that you came up with or that you played with in 86 solely, that you became the closest with during your time with the Mets?
You know, being a rookie, you know, you're kind of, like I said earlier, you're kind of like, hey, you VC, do your job, and you keep your mouth shut. But, you know, Gary was a great mentor to me, Gary Carter. I just felt like he was a good family man. He was a good ball player. He was a solid all-around guy, had good faith. And, you know, we even named our son Cody Carter son after him, reading script for him. This was even before he passed away. And, you know, besides that, it was, you know, Ray Knight and I were pretty tight. We had a good relationship. It was kind of fun. He's a fun guy. I got along with everybody. I'll tell you who else was great. And he got traded away that next year, too, Kevin Mitchell.
Mm.
We had some time in the minor leagues, and Kevin and I got close. I'll tell you how it happened. We were in Tidewater, and his grandma and grandpa came to visit him. My grandparents came to visit me, and they just, like, hooked up like Oreo cookies. I might get in trouble saying that.
No.
I tell you, they just gelled. And because of that, Kevin and I became extremely close, and Kevin and I went through some things together. You know, when he was in Tidewater there in 85, his brother got shot. And I'll tell you, you talk about a guy you'd want to mess with. I saw that guy that was a bad dude from the ghettos in San Diego, and he was mad at all get up. And I was the only guy he would talk to. Only guy. And because we had built this relationship. Funny guy, too. Oh, we had a good time. Good time together.
Good people. Where were you at Game 6 when the Mets are down by 2 runs in the bottom of the extra innings and making a comeback as Gary, you know, leads it off with a 2-out base hit? What were you doing?
Well, I'll tell you, I wasn't in the clubhouse. Okay, let's get that straight. Like a few of our guys were, which was very, very disappointing to find out later.
Yeah, well, I knew that Keith was in Davey's chair.
Keith was in Davey's chair, yep. Strawberry and Kevin.
I think Mitch was making plans for a flight. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
he had to put his pants back on to pinch hit, right?
It was very disappointing to hear, Chris, and it was very uncharacteristic of our team.
Right.
You know, I mean, fortunately, we pulled together and we battled and, you know, the rest is history, but where was I? I was right there trying to find the lucky seat on the bench. You know, I mean, us baseball players are real superstitious. And, you know, if you're on the bench and you're sitting in one spot and it ain't working, especially when it's the, you know, game 6 and you're behind by 2,
yep.
You know, you're searching for that right splitter to get in your butt so you can win the ball game. if you're not in there, you got to do something sports club.
Yeah, find the right spot. One more serious question. You know, Davey Johnson, we lost him recently, and what was it like, you know, what was he like as a manager? How did he handle everybody in a way to get you guys to meet your maximum potential?
I tell you, Davey was a player's manager, which means, you know, he didn't have a lot of rules. I mean, he just said, you show up, you do your job, and then that's it. I mean, guys just did what they wanted. Now, unfortunately, with the Mets, our ESIC team, guys did a lot of things they shouldn't have been doing. And, you know, I often tell when I'm speaking to organizations, I talk about the importance of having character. And I say not characters like we have on the 86 team.
Yeah.
You can have short-term success. I mean, we were solid, great, but we didn't have a lot of character. I mean, just for that short time. But look, the Mets haven't won in 40 years. I'm here to tell you one of the reasons is because they haven't built the kind of organization that is built for long-term success.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, as you said, this summer you're going to be back out at this time. Now it's Citi Field. It was, you know, Shea Stadium. You're going to be meeting up with your team, 40th anniversary. Again, the book is called Conquering Life's Curves, Baseball, Battles, and Beyond. If you find Ed Hearn, you can message him at at Ed Hearn-49, and you can even get a copy of that book. Last question for you. When people look back at Ed Hearn's career and life, what do you hope that they remember the most?
Oh, that's absolutely easy. I hope they remember me as a guy who happened to play baseball, but battled to come back in life and made a difference in a multitude of lives. And that's what Ed Hearn's about.
Well, it's been a pleasure for, you know, a little while just kind of catching up and reliving some of our days. You know, obviously, health-wise, we wish you all the best. I know you've been through a lot, but we hope we can get you out to New York here again. I know you were here recently, but get you out just to get back with your boys, you know, you now, as you know, Ed, you got 18 up in the rafters, you got 16 up in the rafters, you got 17 up in the rafters. A lot of these guys that were on your team are now up in the rafters, and I know the Mets recently gave out number 8 for one game, and I hope eventually that number is up there in the rafters as well.
Yes, sir. I totally agree with that. And Chris, you know, I wanted to correct you as far as people reaching out to me or the book. What you were saying there was the Venmo account. If they want to get a book, it's real easy. Just go at @andher-49, and they can send me messages through that too or whatever. I sign cards and people send me stuff. They could order a book, send me a message, tell me where to send, mail it and all that stuff. And I'd be glad to get one out of here. It doesn't cost no shipping, $20.
Nice.
Easy deal.
Awesome. We appreciate it, Ed. And all the best, and we hope to see you this summer.
Do you have somebody else to come on the show now?
Not really. We got a couple of people who are just going to chat it up. We'll take a break and just, you know, finish it up. Is there anything else you wanted to plug?
Oh, man, I can talk forever, buddy. I'm a speaker, buddy.
Well,
I want to tell you, man.
Go ahead.
I want folks in New York, especially in Long Island, to hang in there with the Mets. And I hope to see everybody out the park on August 1st. It's been 40 stinking years. It's unbelievable that it's been that long. So all of us guys want to see that place packed like it was in 86. And I tell you, most of us are very, very open to hanging out, signing stuff, just being there with you folks. We love our fans. And so I'd love to see you guys, and I know everybody on the team would like to see that Citi Field active.
Yeah, and I mean, even, you know, guys like Dykstra coming back. I know Straw's been talking with him. You know, it's going to be nice to see all you guys back together again. And, you know, this team needs a little life, and maybe, you know, putting some fans in the stands will help with that, because it's been hard. And, you know, they have a new owner in the last few years that's been promising a lot. It's just the team hasn't been able to pull through. So I'm hoping it gives a little life at the end of July, beginning of August.
Absolutely, Chris. I think the new ownership, I like the guy. I think he's all in. And I look for him to be dominating with the Mets and the ownership. But I think there's some people between him and the field that are dragging down that club right now. So I think he's going to turn that around eventually. Fortunately, he's left with the funds to be able to do it. And it's just a matter of figuring out how to use those funds wisely.
Bring in the right
people. And get quality people.
Yeah.
Character. Not just ball players, but ball players with character. And I'll tell you, that'll make long-term success. And Long Island will be happy as can be then.
All right. Well, we appreciate your time, Ed. Thank you very much. We'll be in touch.
All right. God bless you guys.
Okay. Thank you. Again, that's Ed Hearn from the 1986 Mets. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back right after.
Listening to Sports Talk New York. Tune in every Sunday night at 8 p.m. on Long Island's WGBB. Broadcasting on 95.9 FM and 1240 AM. Or listen live online at WGBBRadio.com. Stay connected to Sports Talk New York on WGBB by following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at WGBB Sports Talk. You're listening to Sports Talk New York on Long Island's WGBB. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back in the second half hour of our show. We just had a nice half hour with Eddie Hearn, former Met from 1986. I think he would have stayed on even longer. We had a nice chat, and he'll be around this summer to have a 40th anniversary with his former teammates. We're going to get into a little bit of the Knicks at some point in this half hour. Unbelievable run they've had. They can't lose. The block parties have been canceled on the home games. because the people are partying too much outside of Madison Square Garden. The Knicks just keep knocking off win after win after win. And as I said, the Mets have not had such a good run, and I think things are starting to turn towards the negative for the entire season. But, you know, at some point we wanted to discuss some of the NFL draft, and especially the Giants and some of the moves they made, and the Jets and some of the moves they made. So at this point, I'm going to open up the phone lines, 516-623-1240. And if you want to call in and talk about the NFL draft or the Knicks, Mets, whatever it is, you can call in. We have our first call tonight, and that is Colin. Colin is calling in to talk about the NFL draft. How you doing, Colin?
Pretty good.
So you had some eyes on the NFL draft this year. What did you first notice? What's like a team that maybe you thought had a good draft?
I think the Giants had a really good draft. The Cowboys, they traded up and got a very good defensive player that fell pretty far.
So Caleb Downs, what, dropped to 10?
11, I think.
11?
He got drafted at 11. Okay. Yeah.
And they also got Malachi Lawrence as an edge runner, so they gave themselves a couple of players. So that probably was good for them. Giants went after a linebacker and an offensive tackle. What does that give them? Which guys do you think will help there?
Oh, I think Arvel Reese will be a good, like, defensive key player for the Giants.
Another Ohio State guy?
Yeah. I think he'll be pretty good. He'll get in there, play good defense. And I think Francis Malinoa, I didn't like the pick at first, but it grew on me, and I think I like it now.
Okay, an offensive tackle out of Miami. They also grabbed themselves a cornerback, Colton Hood, out of Tennessee. So, and they did get another wide receiver, Malachi Fields. So it looks like the Giants are trying to be careful about, you know, maybe Malik Nabers not being ready right away. You know, as sort of a Giants fan there, are you excited about what they have coming back?
Yeah, I'm real excited about Malachi Fields. He had a good mini camp so far, and he's looking really good out there.
They did trade away Dexter Lawrence. You think that was something they needed to do?
Yeah, I like that trade. He didn't have a good 2025, and we got another top 10 pick, and we got a good tackle, and we needed a line help. So
yep,
we got happy with that.
Giants have to protect Jackson Dart, and maybe you think Cam Scatterboo might give him a decent year this year?
Yeah, I think Cam Scatterboo will have a really good year. He said he was going for 2,000 yards, but I'm not quite sure that will happen. But he has to be more careful.
Any other team you thought had a good draft?
I think the Bucs had a good draft, getting Reuben Bain at 15. I think he fell really far, and I think he's going to be a very good player.
Okay. The Browns seem to get themselves an offensive tackle and a wide receiver. They got themselves Spencer Fano and then KC Concepcion, so that was good for them. What do you also think about Fernando Mendoza? You think he's a good fit for the Raiders?
Yeah, and I think they got Kirk Cousins in the offseason, so I think they might have him sit a year, watch Kirk Cousins, and learn from him because he's a veteran.
All right, and then the Jets decided at 2 to take David Bailey. They also had two other picks in the first round. Where should Jets fans feel about their team this year?
I wouldn't get their hopes up, but I think they had a very good draft. Got the tight end at 16, and then Omar Cooper Jr. at 30. I think he's very good, and he'll be very good.
Yeah, and I think, for the Jets, I think they're trying to, you know, just try and get through this year and see where they're at. Obviously, they made some big selections this year, starting out with some defense. But I think it's going to be pretty obvious early whether or not they're going to be competitive or not. Any other teams you wanted to discuss?
I think that's it.
All right. Any questions from me?
I don't think so.
All right. Well, I appreciate the phone call. We had our NFL draft from Colin. He kind of called in, basically said the Dallas Cowboys did a nice job moving up. So appreciate the phone call, Colin.
Mm-hmm.
Have a good night.
You You fit.
All right. So we got some NFL draft there. As Colin calls in and gives us a little bit of an idea of what teams were thinking and what teams did moving up. You know, maybe we'll call on him the next time we have a team that maybe is looking to make a trade or move up in the standings. So NFL draft, I think, is a big thing for people. And, you know, they're moving the Super Bowls all around. They're making a lot of different things. They're going to be in Nashville now. So the NFL loves to make a highlight of everything. When they have to reveal their schedule, they have to drop little, you know, crumbs as to what's going to be the big game here or what's going to be the first game of the year. The NFL's moving overseas way too much as far as I'm concerned. But I think it's just a way of growing the sport. And they like to make sure that people know where they're going to be on a certain day. But as I said, we were talking a little bit about the New York Knicks and some of the things that they have done to put themselves out there. Now, the Knicks have won 10 games in a row. They haven't lost a game in 32 days. I mean, they were an underdog last night, and they hadn't lost in 32 days. They're up 3-0 in a series against the Cavs that I thought would probably go six. Where that series turned, game one, a 44-11 comeback in the fourth quarter and overtime. To try to win that. The Knicks have been a plus 234 points over this 12-game span, okay? You're not going to lose games when you're beating teams by 20 points. The only two games they've lost in this offseason have been by a combined 2 points. You know, this has been absolutely everything that the Knicks needed. Again, 516-623-1240 if you want to call in. We talked a little bit about the NFL draft. We'll talk Mets, Jets, we'll talk whatever sport you want to talk about. But my thing with the New York Knicks, you have an absolute superstar. This could go down as the best Knicks team of all time, whether or not they win the NBA championship. Because you're going to be going up against either the San Antonio Spurs or the Oklahoma City Thunder. Okay? Both teams have many weapons that you could win an NBA championship with. So it's going to be a tall task no matter how they go about it. I'm not saying the Knicks are in the finals yet, but up 3-0, it's going to be hard for them to lose this series. Are they going to win it in 4, 5, 6, whatever it might be? Spurs down 2-1 in the series playing tonight, trying to make that. The longer that series goes, the more the Knicks have to look at ways to beat the other team. Jalen Brunson, 27.8 points per game, 6.7 assists per game. Karl Anthony Towns, 10.3 rebounds per game. The team is shooting 40% from three-point range. You have guys like Landry Shamet stepping up. This is a team that is finding ways to win. And every time I seem to find little flaws, it seems like they find a way to come back. 52% overall from the field. Again, you're not going to lose games when you're making the two-pointers and you're knocking down 40% of your shots from three-point range. This team seems to be destined right now for something big. You know, sometimes people look out there and they say, oh, this is a six seed, and eventually when they get to the finals, they're going to have no shot. Sometimes there are teams of destiny, teams that find a way to win even when they're not supposed to win. This team could be it. New York City is in for a rude awakening if the Knicks make the NBA Finals. They will play a bunch of games at home. A bunch of games. If the Knicks happen to, in any way, shape, or form, win the NBA championship, New York will be an absolute massacre of people just running around, rioting, looting. It will be insane. Here is a stat for you. Mikal Bridges. Mikal Bridges playing for the Knicks. Again, not the biggest superstar, but knows his role, knows how to play defense, knows how to move around, knows how to make a shot when he's open. Josh Hart is the man as far as, you know, putting up 27, 29 points a game when he needs to. But I think the key to this team is Mikal Bridges. Mikal Bridges just joined LeBron James as one of only two players shooting 50% from the floor while helping their team win 10 consecutive playoff games. Mikal Bridges shooting 50% from the floor. And that's what you need. A guy who's going to the basket, a guy who's shooting the three, a guy who knocks down a little jumper in the lane. More importantly, his defense. He's got to be able to play defense. Again, I'm Chris Caputo here on WGBB 95.9 FM 1240 AM. It's WGBB Sports Talk New York. By myself tonight, Mike Godone, out vacationing here on this Memorial Day weekend. Okay. Going to change gears a little bit. If you want to call in, it's 516-623-1240. The phone lines are open. Going to change gears a little bit because at this point we know where the Knicks are at. Up 3-0. I would say either four or come back home and win it in game five. At this point, the Knicks have shown superiority over their opponents in the East. I don't think that there was another team that was going to catch them, even if it wasn't the Cavaliers. Okay. Even if the Detroit Pistons had gotten through game seven, I think the Knicks on the road would have taken care of business because they were down this year. And I think it's just a team of destiny. You know, I'll give one more thing on that. You got to stay healthy. And the Knicks at this point have found a way to stay healthy. The numbers work out good for them. The minutes for the bench players have spent more time playing together. And I think that's a key. You know, the fact that last year they weren't healthy. Year before, people getting hurt. So I think this year with people staying healthy, OG Anunoby did, you know, go out for a small period of time, but they got him back. And just at this point, other guys have stepped up, and it's nice to see. Mitchell Robinson's got to work on his free throws. I don't know if that will become an issue, but they are going to go to Hakeem Mitch at some point to try to slow up the game a little bit and maybe get a couple of free throw misses from him. But I think he's done a serviceable job. Guys off the bench like Alvarado have done a decent job. Everybody knows their role, but this is Jalen Brunson's team. And the guys that need to be behind him, Karl Anthony Towns, knows he's got to play big inside. Mikal Bridges knows he's got to defend one of the best players. Josh Hart knows that he has to make sure he does the little things to get it done as well. But this is a good team. And I'm not going to count them out if they make it to the NBA Finals. I think the Knicks can win the NBA championship. Now, did I think they were going to win all of these in sweeps? No. But that is another reason why I think you got to give them a shot. You got to give them a shot. And we'll see what happens. You know, points per game, I don't know what it's going to be. Not going to be winning every game by 20 points. But they're a darn good team. And you got to give them some credit. 516-623-1240 if you want to call in. Going to switch gears, as I said, to the MLB. At this point, Major League Baseball has a lot of teams that are just subpar. A lot of teams subpar. Did we expect the Baltimore Orioles, after making so many acquisitions, including Pete Alonso, to be 23-30. The Boston Red Sox fired their manager, 22-30. Detroit Tigers with Tarik Skubal, 21-33. He'll be on the trading block soon. Playoff teams, Kansas City Royals, 22-31. Los Angeles Angels, 19-34. Houston Astros, 23-31. Mariners are in the playoffs. They're sub 500. Miami Marlins tried to stick around for a little while. Pittsburgh Pirates are 27-26. The entire NL Central is above 500. So if you're looking for games to win, it's not going to be playing them. And the NL West, obviously the Rockies are down, but we didn't expect the Giants to be as low as they are. So where does that leave us? The New York Mets are 22-31. 22-31. We talked about this 2 weeks ago. They're bad. They're really, really bad. And they were a couple, maybe 4 weeks ago, dead last in almost every offensive category. They can't put the ball in play. They can't score runs. They have a minus 21 run differential. But as far as being in games late, they have no shot. If you look at this team, there's not one player on this team who's playing above their capacity. Juan Soto got sick today, couldn't play. You know what he got sick from? All the losing that's been going on. Not one player on this team knows how to step up and win a game for them. They've got young players out there. They've got pitchers that are putting up decent numbers. Doesn't matter. Player with the most RBIs, Bo Bichette, batting 218, but he's got 27 RBIs. Most home runs, Juan Soto. Solo homers, he's got 10 homers, 21 RBIs. Not good. Carson Bench has the best average, and he hasn't even been here that long. 246, but his on-base percentage is 305. You can't be a leadoff hitter and get on base 30% of the time. It's not your job is to get on base even more. Mets today lose in a walk-off fashion, but what I'm going to tell you is it's expected now. The Mets come to the field, and you expect them to lose in a different way every day. And it's not fun. Met fans are not having fun. And somebody has to go. Something has to change. All we keep hearing is the same thing. Hey, listen, something's got to change. We got to roll the same lineup out there, but somebody's got to do something different. And that has to stop. There have to be trades. There have to be cuts. And there have to be people that unfortunately are going to lose their job. And David Stearns needs to step up and say something. Okay? He actually said that the manager wasn't going anywhere, but that was through one of the Mets beat reporters, Anthony DiComo. What needed to happen was he needed to say something to everyone. And the first time he got asked it by the media, which was 2 weeks later, he said, I'm not going to answer this every 2 weeks. Well, you need to step up and say whether or not this manager is going to be there. You need to step up and say whether or not there's going to be changes in the front office or on the bench. And I think it's up to Steve Cohen. At this point, Steve Cohen needs to step in, realize this is not working, put somebody below David Stearns in a position where they make some moves. The Mets don't even have a general manager right now. David Stearns is the president of baseball operations. Basically, he is the end-all and be-all of what happens. Someone else needs to step in and change it. Because as you heard from Ed Hearn tonight, it's been 40 years. And nothing has changed. And the way to change things is to change the character. You need to change the clubhouse. You need to change what's out there. Who knows when Francisco Lindor is coming back? He's not going to be a savior. Who knows who's going to be pitching in a bullpen for the Mets? That's not going to save them. Right now, the Mets can't put the ball in play. Their runs in games that are not blowouts are so low that you can't win a game by giving up zero runs. They're going to lose. They're going to lose 1-0. You saw it today, 0-0 almost the entire game, and they give up a walk-off grand slam. At no point in that game did you have any confidence that that team was going to win. And it's really sad to see. You're losing to a Marlins team that has absolutely dominated you, and now you have to come home, play the Reds, try and, you know, get yourself back. The Mets will not hit 500 this year. It's just not going to happen. At 22-31, you go out and maybe win 5 out of 7, and next thing you know, you go back to getting swept. It's no good. And that's why this town, whether you're a Yankee fan or a Met fan, you need to put all your chips in the middle, and you need to go out there and support the New York Knicks. Now, if you like the Brooklyn Nets, that's fine. But no matter who the Knicks wind up going up against in the NBA Finals, you have to put your support in them. Now, I'm not saying go out there and spend $140,000 like somebody did today on courtside seats to game one of the Knicks hosting a game. Not looking for that. But you got to put yourself in front of the TV, and you got to support this team. Because this could be the one chance you get. Nothing is guaranteed after this. The Knicks gave up 5 number one draft picks to get Mikal Bridges. He's finding a way to come through. The Knicks went out and fired their coach, even though they had made it to the Eastern Conference Finals, and brought in Mike Brown. Mike Brown is pushing the right buttons. Mike Brown is finding a way to use his assistant coaches to make sure that his bench is ready to play. The New York Knicks are for real, and you got to find a way to support this team. They can do it, and that's going to be the talk of the town. The New York Knicks, as I mentioned before, were having watch parties inside, and then during the home games, they were having watch parties outside. The NYPD doesn't want them to have it because it's getting out of control. If the New York Knicks start let's say 2 weeks from now, start the NBA Finals, it's going to be the month of the Knicks in the month of June. People are going to be all over that. And I think it's great. The stats that they have put out there are just enormous. I can't believe some of the things that they have done as far as shooting the ball and playoff basketball here in New York is becoming unbelievable. 121-108, Knicks lead the series 3-0. That game, to be honest with you, wasn't really that close after the second quarter. You thought maybe the other team would make a run? No. Kenny Atkinson, the coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers, lost right now. No clue as to how to beat the Knicks. Okay? Analytically, he thinks they've won 2 out of 3. On paper, 0-3. Okay? Let's go through this. Who won the NBA Cup this year? The Knicks. They didn't want to put a banner up. But they have beaten the San Antonio Spurs. They beat them in the NBA Cup. Okay? This is a team that can do a lot with OG, with Mikal Bridges, with Jalen Brunson, with Karl Anthony Towns, with Josh Hart, and with a bench. And let me say this again. There really is a lot behind the fact that three of these players played together, or at least played at the same college for Villanova. These guys love each other. The night that Josh Hart got traded to the New York Knicks, someone showed a phone to Jalen Brunson, and he jumped for joy. These guys are roommates. They love it. They love being around each other. Now, Jalen Brunson, only an all-NBA second team. Could be the NBA Finals MVP if he comes out there and does his job. Karl Anthony Towns did not make an all-NBA team. OG Anunoby should have been a first-team all-defense. Okay? Didn't do it. Didn't put him on there. The New York Knicks, doing great. And I think this is the time for them. Okay. At this point, I'm going to wrap things up. I wanted to thank Mike Godone for letting me take this show by myself tonight. I had a long week. I announced some games for flag football for Nassau County. Wish all those teams luck as they move on to the Long Island Championships. A lot of high school teams out there doing a lot. Adelphi Lacrosse fell one goal short. They lost in overtime. Otherwise, they would have had a three-peat in Division II. Finally, I'd like to thank Brian Graves on the other side of the glass, Ed Hearn for being a phone call, as well as having Colin on the show. And we'll see you guys in 2 weeks. This is Chris Caputo signing off for WGBB Sports Talk New York.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.